Germany goes to the polls in less than a fortnight. And there'll be a glaring omission on the ballot, the name Angela Merkel. The country's first woman leader, the first chancellor since German reunification to be raised in the communist East. She will not be recontesting. 16 years in the top job. They have been interesting times. Global financial disaster, Brexit, the rise and rise of Vladimir Putin, migrant crisis, to name just a few of the things that have entered into her period in office. But what a presence she has been. Alan Crawford is a senior editor at Bloomberg News, co-author of the biography Angela Merkel, A Chancellorship Forged in Crisis, and he joins us on the line from Berlin. Welcome to the program, Alan.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
There's a great line in your recent analysis of Merkel. You write, Merkel is standing down, depriving Germans of their rock of restrained stability. Are Germans prepared for this? Their leader for almost two decades departing, what it will leave such a hole?
That's undoubtedly true. I think it's fair to say that Germans, they do want to see political change. They have had a long run, not so much of Merkel, but they've had a long run of her form of coalition government, of her party, the kind of centre-right, and the Social Democrats. They've ruled together for 12 of her 16 years in office. And there is a sense that Germans would like some kind of change, but at the same time, Merkel remains the most popular politician in Germany by quite some way, which is quite something after 16 years. So there's a bit of a mixture there, a political change, but they would kind of like Merkel, or if not her, then someone kind of like her.
And political change in Germany, as you say, it's a matter of coalition and the stitching of allegiances. The nature of that change can be hard to determine from this side of those stitchings.
Very much so. It's both difficult to discern which government we will get afterwards, and of course even more difficult to try and decipher what kind of policies they would have, because any mixture of parties, at the moment the polls suggest it could be three different parties, then they have to come together and form some kind of coherent policy platform, which of course means compromise and concessions.
Was there any suggestion, if we go back to the beginning in 2005, that she would become such a dominant character in German and global politics?
Quite the opposite. That she took quite some time to settle down in terms of the direction that she wanted to take, and I think it's fair to say she didn't really have a very clear policy direction. She's the head of the Christian Democratic Union, which is a kind of centre-right conservative party. It's a broad church, and she veered a little bit between, you know, the right tax-cutting flank of the party to now where she's in centre ground. But remember, when she did win the election back in 2005, she only very narrowly won. She lost a very large poll lead and won by something like one percentage point. So she didn't have the best start.
Well, and indeed, and in terms of circumstances, an awkward start too, because the global financial crisis comes pretty hard on the heels of her rise to power.
Yeah, and it was something that hit Germany hard as one of the world's biggest exporters, and it really I actually remember that I was covering one of the what used to be called the G8 summits, which of course is the G7 now because Russia was kicked out. I was at the G8 crisis up by the Baltic Sea, which she hosted, and I'm struggling to remember if that was 2006. But there was, at the time, it may have been 2007, that there were indications of what was to come in terms of, you know, the real estate bubble and, you know, subprime mortgages. And she was warning about, you know, the need for greater control of some of these financial instruments. Not that she saw what was coming. I don't mean to say that whatsoever. But there were hints. There were hints of what was to come. And yes, I mean, it completely bowled over her chancellorship.
Well, and her response there too is of a part with that sort of caution. I mean, she becomes a chief proponent of austerity. And if we can go to cases there, I mean, Greece was in terrible strife during the global financial crisis. And there was her treatment of Greece and the demands on the sort of behalf of greater Europe. De Spiegel called it a catalogue of cruelties towards Greece. I mean, the austerity that Merkel championed in that period. What's the verdict of that, you know, these years down the track?
Well, it's like much of her legacy, it can appear somewhat mixed. What you say is true, undoubtedly. This, of course, is a few years down the line. This is after late 2009, when Greece first declared that it had a massive budget deficit. And then what you have to remember is that yes, of course, she was the chancellor, but she wasn't all powerful. She had her party and indeed her coalition at the time to satisfy. And certainly one senior German official who was involved very closely in all of this, he recalled later that, you know, Merkel could only go so far and still hold both her party, her coalition, and the country with her. You know, for better or worse, that was the case. And he was saying that at that point, these were crazy times in Europe when it wasn't just Greece, remember, that there were Ireland, Spain, other countries required bailouts. Germany was the biggest donator of funds. And Merkel, as this person was saying, that it wouldn't have helped the situation at all if Germany had then collapsed as well. So, you know, these things all have to be taken into consideration, I feel.
On the other side of that ledger, I mean, Germany's position, as you say, of strength in that period, did she make the most of that, do you think, in terms of Germany's presence in Europe more broadly?
You can, of course, say that no, she didn't, that she should have pushed through all sorts of measures, because that was really, the Euro crisis was really the moment when Germany came to the fore. And controversially, it became very clear that it was the dominant power in Europe. So, yes, she could have pushed for more. At the same time, you then move on to the refugee crisis, which of 2015, where she did take a stand and take a lead in Europe. Again, controversially, because, you know, we're talking about 27 different, you know, national states. It's not easy to find compromise. So, yeah, there's always more that she could have done. That's certainly true.
The refugee crisis is an interesting one, because there, you know, she I think, and perhaps more outside of Germany than within, potentially. You'll tell me if I'm wrong, but got great kudos for Germany's quick reception of those people in strife. But how that then played down the track was significantly more problematic internally.
Definitely. It was hugely controversial, both in Germany and across Europe. And indeed, if you remember, that Donald Trump blasted Merkel regularly for her acceptance of refugees. But yes, she took a stand that she saw these people. I don't know if you remember the pictures, but there were thousands of people, many of them from fleeing the war in Syria, who were amassing on the Austrian border at the Vienna railway station. And this invoked for her memories of the just before the fall of the wall. And she felt a responsibility to take in people. She made the point that Germany is a big, wealthy country. We can afford to assimilate these people. And yes, that directly led to the rise of a far-right anti-immigration party, the Alternative for Germany, which went on to become the largest opposition party. Although at the same time, and that you could say that that, of course, is part of her legacy. At the same time, if you look at all the countries around Germany, if you look at France, where President Macron is going to face a challenge, or will face a challenge from Marine Le Pen next year, and she could win that election. It's a realistic possibility. If you look at Austria, they've refused to take any refugees whatsoever. The Dutch government is something like it's a seven-party coalition, or at least that's what they're looking at. They're still trying to form a coalition because the politics have been splintered by the far right. Then if you take it in the whole, then I would argue that Merkel has managed to hold the mainstream, the political middle together, and that's pretty important.
You mentioned there the fall of the wall, and of course Merkel raised in East Germany. How did that, what did that do to her sort of political worldview? How did that shape her politically?
Well, she is often misunderstood both internationally but also domestically because, of course, Germany, it's unified since 1990, but it's still largely dominated by the West. Mm. And her worldview is one that, for example, when she was a student, she used to take the train and go through the Balkans. And she's described in one speech, as an aside, she described looking over from I need to get my geography right, but I think it was from Bulgaria, looking over the border to Greece, where of course she couldn't go because that was in the West and Bulgaria was in the East. She spent time studying in Prague. She also was a big fan of Polish cinema, and she knows Gdańsk well, again at the Baltic Sea, so that she knows all of these Eastern European countries, which of course are relatively new members of the European Union. She knows them well. That doesn't mean that politically she always gets along with the Polish government or the Czech government at the moment, but at least she understands where they come from in a way that, for example, Macron or the other leaders don't.
And a Russian speaker, which explains it's a fascinating relationship between Merkel and Putin. How would you characterise it?
Well, it's definitely not a friendly relationship. But again, Merkel comes in for a lot of criticism, and her legacy will always be regarded as mixed, because some people take an absolute position, in particular as regards Russia and Putin, that we shouldn't deal with them. But she takes the view that dialogue is always better, it's always the best approach, and so that she speaks regularly on the phone to Putin. She badgers him about Ukraine and Crimea and to stick to the Minsk peace process, but which of course he hasn't done, but she keeps that channel open. And so there is undoubtedly no love lost. Remember that he spent time as a KGB officer in East Germany. And she also spent time in Moscow, where, as you say, she was a Russian speaker. As a scientist, she spent time there. So they know each other's backgrounds. They understand each other. But, undoubtedly, there's no love lost. And I strongly suspect Putin will not miss her much, apart from this idea of some kind of dialogue with the West.
Although going forward too, there's significant energy dependence in Germany on Russian gas, which is a consequence of various negotiations in this period. How does that sit in her legacy, in particular in that very vexed area around energy, around climate change?
I think it sits like it goes perfectly well alongside with her idea of dialogue. I mean, it's not new that Germany gets gas from, or that Europe as a whole gets gas from Russia. That's happened, even during all throughout the Cold War, for example. At the moment, it's interesting because we're seeing price spikes in electricity. Price spikes and also gas, and that's largely, as I understand, because of a lack of supply. So it may well be that people will end up thanking Merkel for Nord Stream 2, but nevertheless, it wasn't her decision, but she did defend it in the face of remember, America tried to sanction companies and tried to, you know, physically get this to stop and failed. So I think also it came down to a little bit of Europe's idea of being able to do take its own geopolitical decisions. But yes, again, controversial.
In the broad, I mean, she's such a remarkable leader at a time when politics in other countries threw up people without her sort of strength of character or seriousness, I think. I mean, and I have in my head here that famous photo of Merkel leaning on the table, staring down Donald Trump, who is staring back somewhat defiantly, but I would say also somewhat cowed. That relationship was an extraordinary one, and I wonder how grateful we might be for the presence of someone of Merkel's strength in those conversations with someone like Trump.
Well, remember that Trump singled out Merkel, arguably more than any other world leader, for political and frankly personal abuse on Twitter, of course. And but Merkel, she gave a speech in Munich. It was a year or two after Trump was in office, and it was just after she had gone to visit him to along with Macron, incidentally, to try and convince him to stay in the Paris Climate Agreement and also to stay in the Iran Nuclear Accord. And they came back empty-handed on both counts. And Merkel gave a speech in Munich afterwards, and she said that that America is no longer a dependable partner for Germany. And that was very significant, coming from a leader like Merkel, but also for a country like Germany, which was... It relied on the US for its rehabilitation after World War II. It was a very significant statement, but I think that fundamentally, that Merkel, she believes in dialogue, she believes in compromise as part of the German system, and that's the polar opposite from the Trumpist view of the world. Yeah.
Alan, thank you so much. We will definitely mark her passing, a significant presence, and your book, Angela Merkel, A Chancellorship Forged in Crisis. Thank you for your time, Alan Crawford, Senior Editor at Bloomberg News.